and welcome back to Get Carried Away. We hope you had a lovely festive period. We are full of Prosecco and cheese and turkey. And we're going to do the two episodes, episode 4 and 5 of And Just Like That today because of Christmas, and we didn't want to bombard you too much with too many episodes. We thought we'd give you a break, and now we're back in 2022.
And we have a special guest.
We have a guest today, which is so exciting.
All the way from London.
All the way from London, isn't it? Jordan Wake, welcome to Get Carried Away.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm just going to put his volume up. We're so happy to have someone else on the podcast, and we've been having a chat before we recorded, and he's given so much good insight already. So,
and like different opinions, which is really important as well to have.
Yeah, so, it's so nice to have someone else to talk. Yeah, definitely a different point of view. So, just want to start by asking Jordan, what's your first memory? What's your first memory of Sex and the City? When did you first realize that you love it?
I always love this question, and I'm so glad you've asked because people don't ask me this enough. So I first got into Sex and the City thanks to my nan, because my nan watched the original. She went to the movies to see the first and the second movie. And I remember one night I was staying at hers back in Norfolk, where I'm from, and I couldn't sleep. It was like 2 a.m. So I went into the lounge and was like, you know, looking for something to watch. And I was looking through the DVDs and I saw Sex and the City, and I thought, oh, this looks fun. And I watched the first movie, and just like that, I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah. So your first dealing with it was the film. Your first, like, you didn't watch.
My first experience with Sex and the City was the first movie, which is still my I love the movie. Say whatever you want about it, but it is one.
You know, that's
movies.
Exactly my first experience too. I saw the film really? Before I even watched the series. Yeah, I went to see it in cinema with a friend of mine, and when I went to see it, I knew about it, but I was like, oh my God, like when I saw the film, I was like, I have to watch this from the start now, because yeah. I didn't know, because you don't know, like, yeah. You know, when you see the chapter part at the start of the film and you're like, I'm like, oh my God, okay, I need to figure out like where this is all come from.
Mine was different because I am younger than Kira, just had to put it in there. So when Kira started watching it, she bought the box set. Yeah. So then my first experience was running into Kira's room when she was out getting into her bed and watching the series. At like what age would I have been? I would have been only like 13.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Now younger.
I would have been 14. I think I would have probably been 14. I mean, when did the first movie come out? 2008. I'm 25 now. I think I watched it a couple of years after it came out. So maybe around that same age.
Yeah, well, maybe I was younger than that though, because I definitely remember getting into your room. You always have a TV.
A little TV with a built-in DVD player, which is like so like noughties.
And I used to love the second series was my favorite to watch over and over and over.
Oh, that's the thing about having the DVD is you just like watch them over and over. And that's why it's become my comfort show. It's just like, it depending on my mood, I'll put on, I love this episode, or I'll put this episode on. And I love that.
It's so relatable to like whatever you're like, you know, I always found it's so relatable to whatever you're going for, whether it's like career challenges, relationship challenges, friendship challenges. Like there's just something for everyone, and each show is like, it has that collective feel to it, but also they cover such a broad spectrum of topics, you can always find something that's going to suit your mood for that day.
Yeah, exactly.
If you had to, I know I have one episode that I watch constantly. It's probably my most watched episode.
Yeah, same.
Ask
Jordan first.
Okay, Jordan, do you have one episode
that you always like to go to, that you just love so much,
that you'll have watched more than the others?
Yeah, I think it would be the last episode of season 4, which is I Heart New York, which was
the sailors, that one.
No, that is the start of series 5, I believe. It's the episode where Miranda gives birth and Big Snapper. It was dedicated to New York because that was the time of the 9/11 attacks. Just has like this real, I feel a very emotional attachment to New York, and it just that kind of whole I Heart New York. Like I love the kind of storylines, you know, Samantha catches Richard and she kind of like walks out and she's like, now your heart's broken too.
Now your heart's broken too.
And like Carrie walks away for, you know, big moves away, and Miranda gives birth, and like I don't know, like it just has that real comfort episode. And it starts where Carrie's like, you know, there comes a time in the seasons where you need a blanket or something along those lines.
Oh, and she goes to his house with the pizza. She brings the pizza
and she
her New York pizza. Yeah, it's a real.
You're like, she's like, if you're tired, you don't take it, you don't move to Napa, you take a Napa.
Yeah,
that episode. And then the one before that actually is another one which would be on par, which is a Vogue idea.
I love that one. I'm drunk at Vogue.
These are patent leather Mary Janes.
I know.
It's like that whole kind of fashion closet scene, and she's drunk at Vogue and she thinks she bumps into Anna Wintour when she's like staggering out of the office.
And her
like,
pinstripe, she's wearing a pinstripe suit, a long skirt.
The Vivian Westwood one. Yeah. And I try to find a suit identical to that. Mm-hmm. I just absolutely love it. But yeah, I'd say I Heart New York on par with the episode just before. I think it's episode 17, and then I Heart New York is episode 18.
And I love in that, and I Heart New York, I forgot, she calls Big the Chrysler Building.
Yeah,
she's like, but you're like the Chrysler Building, you know. There's so many New York references in that episode, which is actually so lovely. It's like a love letter to New York.
I love the episode.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. And I think kind of par with, you know, I feel a very emotional attachment to New York, and it's kind of a love letter, as you said, to New York. I think I just find it very comforting.
We love New York too. Yeah, we absolutely love New York. So yeah, it's so nice. And if it's a real fairy, it shows New York in a real fairy tale way, because they're in the host horse and cart in the Central Park, and it's just this gorgeous, like,
my heart, New York. My favorite episode is the one that I watch so much, and you watched it recently, is the Valley of the 20-something Girls when they go to the Hamptons.
Oh, and she sees Natasha for the first time.
I love that episode. I don't know why. I have like an attachment to that one. It's fun. Episode. They go down to the Hamptons. Carrie meets that girl who's like obsessed with her.
Oh yeah.
And she's like, oh my god, Carrie, that's so cool. He's so cute. Oh my god. And she's just like, okay. And then
I'd be like that if I met Carrie.
And she's like, Mr. Bradley Migo.
Oh, that weird doctor.
Yeah, he's like.
We always talk about how the guys in Sex and the City just aren't really not that attractive.
They're fucking rotten.
Yeah, when you look, yeah.
Mr. Big, I think, I know we're not allowed really to like Chris Knott at this moment in time with all these allegations, but
yeah, we don't
separating Chris Knott from the character Big was a handsome character, I feel.
Yeah,
he was handsome.
Just some of them, I always thought the girls are like stunning.
Trey? What do you feel about Trey? Do you feel like Trey was good looking?
Yeah, he's very charming. I feel like Trey was like
that. Yeah, he was until like the point of the Mummy's Boy, and then that kind of killed it for me.
But then I kept thinking about him in Desperate Housewives.
Yeah,
because he's like he had a really weird character in Desperate Housewives. So it's like
I never really got into. I need to watch all of it from start to finish. I watched it a little bit when it first came out. I was really young.
Desperate Housewives is brilliant. It's a good show.
But they're doing a reboot of that as well.
They're not.
No,
everyone thinks they are.
I was like, oh my god, not another reboot.
But you know, just to add one of my favorite lines in the whole series is the one where you know Samantha catches Richard and she starts putting flyers around him.
Yeah.
And she's like strapping it up to like a pole, and the policeman, which is actually Miranda Bailey from Grey's Anatomy, she's like ma'am, you can't put that here, it's public property. And she's like, I caught this man eating another woman's pussy. And she's like, carry on, ma'am. I love that.
That's the part of Sex and City that we love. But we're gonna go into, and just like that, we don't want to reminisce too much. You have to come on for those episodes when we do them in the podcast.
So we go to episode 4.
So we're doing it. We're gonna discuss 4 and 5.
Yeah. So just a quick recap of episode 4. So Some of My Best Friends. So this is when Carrie returns to her old apartment after she decides to sell the Fifth Avenue apartment.
Which I understand.
And her buyer, her realtor Seema, clears out everything and kind of changes things around.
So this is where we first meet Seema. How do you feel about Seema?
I love Seema. I absolutely love Seema. I think that's exactly what the show needed.
She's absolutely stunning.
Gorgeous.
Reminds me so much of Samantha in the time, like, you know, she walks into a room and she just commands the attention.
Yeah.
Like, she just has that presence about her. She wears a lot of, like, you know, real power outfits, and she just oozes elegance. Like, I feel like that's exactly what the show needed.
Yeah. And what Carrie needed. She needed someone to just take charge.
And Samantha. And Carrie realized
that's exactly what Samantha would do if she was in that position.
Yeah.
Samantha would be taking care of all of this. She would just be like, honey, we can pay people to do things like that. I can have that done by the time we get back, you know? And like, she's just like, my movers are like ninjas. And she just like, you know, she just has that same presence as what I think, you know, Samantha had. So I'm glad that they had that character kind of come in, especially at this point in the series where Carrie definitely needed it.
And Carrie we see, like, in the first film, Carrie gets Louise from St. Louis as well. She always likes to have these women around that can help her in these times. Like, she likes a strong woman presence to, like, help her get shit done when she's at a low point, I think.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that message that comes with that, like, women empowerment and having women there.
Yeah, she loves a woman who's, like, gets shit done.
Yeah, we love that.
Because Carrie does not.
No, she doesn't get shit done. Remember her. CarrieBradshaw.com is a miss.
So is Carrie Bradshaw. So then we go to Charlotte. So she is with her new friend. It's Lisa Todd Wexley. I get the very, you know, the way we have, you know, Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah.
You know Lisa, yeah.
So Lisa Vanderpump is LVP. And they give her this kind of like nickname.
LTW.
LTW.
It's very, like, I kind of love.
Yeah, it's very like Lisa Vanderpump.
And I love how Charlotte is just commanding the parents part of the school. Like, of course Charlotte would be like
the queen
on the parent committee. Like, it's just so Charlotte. Like, that's so true of her character.
Yeah. I feel like as we go on, Charlotte's character becomes more true to self as we go on.
She's probably the most the same, I think.
Yeah. So I'm really actually loving everything to do with Charlotte's storyline.
Yeah, me too.
I don't want to skip on to
how do you feel about LTW?
LTW is the definition of chic. She looked incredible. I just love her energy. Yeah. I just think she's absolute. Like, her whole, like,
I love,
you know,
her
presence,
character,
what she brings to the storyline, like, you know, her apartment. Like, I love her. I think she's fabulous.
I love her kid.
And she's on the Vogue, awesome. Vogue dressed 100%.
Oh, yeah. I love her child. Is it? I can't know.
I don't know if it's her daughter or something. They're like, or the croissant in French. I have to go.
Yeah.
Like, of course they did.
So what is it? Charlotte invites her over, or does she invite
Charlotte and Harry. But Charlotte's in the middle of organizing a colonoscopy for Harry.
Yeah, I love that.
It's just like, again, we know you're old.
Yeah. This whole old man.
Then she's like, I have to cancel a colonoscopy.
Yeah. So what is it? She invites Charlotte over, and then Charlotte tries to invite her over.
She said, we must invite you over. And then she said something dropped off her calendar. So how is this
tomorrow? Day? Oh, yeah. So she wants
2 days from now. And Charlotte's like, okay.
And then as Charlotte's inviting everyone, she realizes that Lisa and her husband would be the only black couple there. So she starts to kind of panic because she obviously wants them to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very Charlotte thing to do. And I think we were talking about this before. So we don't want to give too much opinion, as we said, like, we are coming from the side of, like, you know, white people. So we don't want to be given too much of our opinions because, you know, we feel like it's not up to us to, like, decide how other people feel. So, you know, we just feel like, you know, the show has now all these important storylines, and there, we just don't want it to be.
We don't want to speak in depth too much about things that maybe we don't fully know about or are fully educated about, but it's great to see them exploring these storylines.
And I think it's important to add in that Charlotte is, you know, going a little bit above and beyond and kind of panicking in the situation.
To make people feel comfortable, which is so Charlotte.
It's so Charlotte, but it's also like, I don't know, it was a little bit unnecessary the way she's going on about it. I don't know, how do you feel about the way they went about it in the storyline, Jordan? You felt like a little bit the same. It's like, what way?
Yeah, I just felt like, I think the message that they're pushing is A, important, but B, I think they're overcompensating in a lot of ways, which is pushing perhaps the wrong agenda.
Yeah.
I think you cannot, like, I love the scene where LTW and Charlotte have the conversation at the end, and that just felt like a real conversation. It didn't feel like they were having to, you know, fluff or anything. It wasn't frivolous. It was just two people having a conversation, and a really educated conversation, and they were sharing their differences of opinion, and they felt like they came away from it, you know, in a better position. That felt really good. But I think the initial dialogue of, you know, Charlotte, like, you know, running around, you know, harassing
another person of a different background was a little bit like, I don't know, like, how, again, like, as us, I don't know how offensive that would be to someone else, you know, having someone to kind of run around to try and find another person that's diverse to bring. It's kind of like,
oh, like, was she worried about how Lisa would see her, or was she worried about Lisa's?
I think she was worried. I think she was more worried about Lisa feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, would she feel uncomfortable being in a room with only white people? Which I think that is considerate, and it is nice to think that people would put that out there. But then again, it's like it is kind of the wrong message to be like, she was trying so hard to find someone else and she was like searching for the depths to find another person,
ringing Anthony, asking for one of his delivery boys, and the woman she doesn't really speak to downstairs, which was
a bit rude.
A funny scene where like she's like, where'd you get your sweater, and there's like J. Crew. She's like, it's really a lovely sweater.
Like, she's coming kind of from the wrong way, but like her intentions are good, but maybe the way she went about it wasn't good. And I don't know how offensive that would have been to someone else to like see that happening, like see someone running around trying to find another person of color to bring in. I don't know if that was like the right way.
Yeah.
But also we see at the end where Lisa Todd said she felt the same.
Yeah, like about
Charlotte
her,
in as the only white couple.
Because when they go to that party, they go, and then Charlotte and Harry are the only white couple, I think. They're right.
So when Charlotte and Lisa have this conversation, it was funny. It was nice to see them laugh.
Yeah, because that's a real conversation. Like you said,
Jordan, nice to see them laugh.
Those conversations happen.
Yeah. But again, like I think the narrative of bringing in really important topics like race and including more diverse casts is like really, really important. It's something I really have like strong beliefs. I really like to see a more diverse cast. So it's nice to see Sex go that way. But as we said, we feel like there's a lot of compensation to do after, you know, some of the storylines in the past in the series.
Yeah,
some questionable storylines and maybe some things that were definitely weren't correct and offensive. So I know they're trying to maybe like, what is it, what's the word, to like redo it or make it right this time.
Yeah, kind of like rejig it or something.
Yeah,
but
so,
anyway,
yeah, so we love Lisa Todd's character and we're glad that she's here, and I love her and Charlotte's friendship. And yeah, we had a good laugh at the end. And also just to know,
Tommy's like on a ramble. I don't know, I've never seen you speak this much.
Really?
No. Well, not even in life. I'm like,
well, I just wanted to mention also how we just love Charlotte's knowledge and all the paintings.
Yeah, we do.
She went over to her dinner.
How did you feel about the dinner party scene?
Yeah, I loved it. But again, that like it, you know, it felt real. It felt like it, you know, it felt like an actual dinner party. It didn't feel like anything was being, you know, she wasn't, you know, overcompensating on her knowledge or like, you know, forcing an agenda across. It was just, you know, she was just, it was a real dinner party, and it was just, it was nice to watch. And it was nice to watch the friendship between, you know, LTW and Charlotte evolve authentically, and not because she's just, you know,
trying to find a friend from a different background.
Did you feel
like she's not harassing you know, her neighbor because she needs another black person at the, like, the, you know, her dinner party? Like, it was just too forced, and it just wasn't like,
I love the way in the scene when they're sitting down, and obviously LTW's mother-in-law like doesn't like her, or she doesn't think she's good enough or whatever, and I love that Charlotte came to her defense. And in only the way Charlotte would, with her knowledge and expertise on paintings. Like, that's where Charlotte, like, we see Charlotte as a mom and perfect parent and all this, but we always forget, like, Charlotte was like an absolute gallery, what they call a gallerina. Like, she like loved paintings and art, and that's where her true Charlotte comes out. And it's so nice to see that she was using that in defense of her friend, like her real, you know, like, it's like, actually, I'm really educated, and this painting was this and this. And we have the funny moments where Harry saying, you know, like, I read Michelle Obama's book, and everyone laughs at the table because it's nice and it's funny and it's a real conversation. I love that. I love the way
going back to the going back to the kind of the Charlotte with the art thing, I think, because obviously there was such a, you know, a big kind of like stay-at-home mom, and she's raising the kids and she's quitting the art gallery. So it was nice to see, because Charlotte is more than that. She is a really you know, she's an educated woman. She you know, like, she's on the board at the Met. She, you know, she's organizing all the school functions for the kids. You know, she's just, you know, she's so much more than, you know, when, because in the original series, when, you know, she was quitting her job and, you know, the girls were kind of giving her that pressure of, you know, so what are you going to do now? And like, she is, you know, she's a stay-at-home mum, but she is, you know, she's doing all these other things. And it was nice for her to exercise that knowledge and her true passion, which is so engraved in her character. So that was really
lovely. We haven't heard her talk about art like in so long. It was nice to see she still has that love for it. Like, I love that part of it.
Do you know, so sorry, I was just having a quick look at the recap, and then just after that Miranda goes to dinner with her professor. Professor Naya
Wallace.
I actually really like Naya Wallace's character. I think she's fab, and I love the conversation they have about her like trying to get pregnant, like IVF.
That's a real bonding situation, isn't it?
And I think again, like, another important topic being brought up, as a lot of women go through struggling with IVF. And I think the way they brought this in, it's not like pushed on you. It's just like the way some of the other big topics, you feel like there's like a big deal about it, but this is like really like the way they they talk about it. It's just like a nice conversation.
I love the way their relationship has evolved since the first episode.
Yeah,
that scene still makes me cringe when Miranda is fumbling all over her words.
I know, she's a bit like, oh, but I do like the way they sat down for dinner. I think it's nice. It's like, oh, they're fine.
Yeah, it's just because the original, like that first scene, you know, in the first episode, like it was just, it felt very forced and they were just pushing and it's like, you could understand the conversation without, you know, you can understand the message that they were trying to present in the dialogue without having it forced. You know, it was just, it could have gone, like I said, again, with the Charlotte storyline in episode four, personally for me I think it could have been done a bit more authentically rather than superficially. That's how it felt like she wasn't, you know, with the dinner party, you know, it felt too forced for me.
Yeah, it was very forced, but I'm like to see
that Miranda and Nia Wallace, she's given her a second chance, and she's obviously, Miranda, I feel like her character has come through a little bit more, so like she is an intelligent woman
They all are intelligent women, so it's nice to see them talking about those kind of things and they're not just like moms.
Although I do have to feel like in this conversation, like Miranda like was a little bit more negative about parenthood, like she wasn't overly like, oh my god, having my child was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, she was never like that though about Brady, like
like a massively maternal person. Do you remember when she was sat on Carrie's like doorsteps and she's like, Carrie, I was babysitting and I was babysitting my nephew and I got bored and I dropped him on his head.
Or when she's like, my dog Snout Pepper.
She put the elastic band on her dog Snout. Remember that? And she's like, she says that one of the episodes as well.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not good.
She just doesn't have that maternal, like she's never been like the most maternal person.
I like that.
Mother, but.
Why? Because you're like that.
Yeah, because I'm like that as well, like towards children. Like, I'm not, you'd be a Charlotte towards children, I would say.
Not really.
Well, you're more like, I feel like, well, Miranda, when push came to shove, and she went for that episode when she was going to have the abortion and everything, and then she decided to keep it. It was like, it was so nice because she's a different parent, and I like to see different, like, not everyone is the Charlotte parent.
Oh, I know that. But my thing is, I understand that Miranda's not an overly maternal person and that she wasn't always open to having loads of kids. But I felt like she has a child and she didn't, she wasn't like saying like, I love my child.
She
so
hates Brady at the moment.
Like, I felt like, you know, she wasn't being like, you know, Brady is the best thing.
Maybe she's obviously just in a weird place and we can see that. Like,
I know, but I was just
she's
like,
listening to him have sex every single night. Let's just be thankful she hasn't disowned Brady at this point.
Yeah,
exactly. She's picking up his strawberry flavor lube from Amazon. Like, let's just be thankful Brady has not been moved out of the house.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't like that storyline because I'm sorry, like,
no. We were always like, Brady's so cute, and now he's like,
no, I'm sorry, but what mom is going to be actively like letting their son?
I do think it's different for mothers and sons, boys in the house and girls, though. I don't know, but like, Steve's deaf, so he can't hear anything.
Yeah. Why do they do that to poor Steve? He's not that old. Also, can we just talk about the way that Stanford exit the show?
Yeah, so this is probably my biggest qualm with this, right? Stanford would never do that.
And like, I feel like in this series, there's a lot of things that like are not, we've said this a million times, not true to character, but like, there's no way that Stanford would just
write a letter. Or if he did, it would be a lot more moving than what he did write. And I don't think he'd go to Tokyo. Would he go to Tokyo?
With a TikTok star, like, again, with this
whole, I don't remember him making any kind, I don't know. I think my opinion on it is that they had a really, really difficult situation and they had a really, really big hole to fill. So maybe by doing it in a really over the top way that they were hoping that it would fill the void because of, obviously, you know, sadly, Willie Garson passing and Stanford having such, you know, such a pivotal storyline in this series, which, you know, unfortunately got cut. Maybe by making it so unrealistic, it kind of overcompensated for the fact that they had such a difficult position. And by doing so, they kind of felt that they were sealing that over in perhaps the most unrealistic way, but in that would kind of put a full stop to his story in the series. Because if it was like he moved to, I don't know, LA or something to work with a TikTok star, it's like, well, why wasn't he back and forth on a plane to see Carrie? Maybe by doing it from the other side of the world and by doing it from something that's so, you know, because he's always been like, you know, I can't remember what his job was, but looking after
talent. He was a talent agent.
The TikTok star actually isn't really unrealistic because, you know, in the first season, you know, he's looking after models and now, like, you know, he's looking after, you know, a TikTok star. That's not really that unrealistic. I think the letter, maybe, but again, like, because obviously Willie Garson, after what was it, 3 episodes, unfortunately, had to cut filming because he was so sick. So perhaps they didn't actually get the chance to do the other thing. So they had to make the best of a bad situation.
I'm like, exactly. Then I'm like to myself, what if I, if I'm not happy with that, what way would I have done that? If I was a writer, how would I have wrote him out of it?
But like, I don't, in a don't way like that's how, true to him. I don't like the way they say like he all of a sudden wanted to divorce Anthony again.
Yeah,
like,
but then
again, like that's another
that was so part. Coming. That was so coming. That was so coming.
Yeah, like, they were a big upset.
Yeah. They just, that was so, like, when
they were definitely referencing.
No, I agree that they were trying to reference it a bit, but I don't think that you could see it coming, because I know they had their little arguments, but then after Big died, the two of them went into each other and hugged each other because they realized like how important.
But even at the wedding when they got married, it was never, I always felt it was an element of settling between them in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Because they were the only like two gay characters in Sex and the City, so of course they had to end up together. Like, they were never meant to work to begin with. Like, the only like, I felt like it was like there was no other gay characters, so of course the only two gay characters in the whole series had to end up together.
And
like,
to be honest, in the second film when it opened up, remember they're all in Bergdorf's and they're getting the gifts for them, when I realized they were getting married, I was a bit like, oh, that's a bit stupid. It's like they had to, yeah, like exactly what you were saying.
I don't know, because in fairness, in the series, you have seen Stanford with other partners, and he was with a long-term partner, Marcus. Like, I think they put them together because it was, again, like it wasn't love at first sight, but it was in fact love, what Marcus does say. Anthony. So I think, oh, sorry, Anthony.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I wish he had a left in a more heartwarming way or something. I just was a bit like, what?
Yeah,
gone.
It was like he's gone to Japan. He didn't say goodbye to anyone. Yeah. Obviously, I know
he obviously couldn't. Past,
I know they had to, what, like what you said, they had to make the best of a bad situation. I felt like they could have made.
But then I'm like, I don't think I would have been happy with it anyway.
Yeah, like, you know. Can you imagine
Stanford having a non-dramatic exit? Like, he was so camp and fabulous and extra. Like, you know, writing a note to your best friend and moving to Tokyo to work with a TikTok star. Like, that's just so kind of, you know.
And who's to say, like, in our Sex and the City imagination, that he doesn't come back at some point?
Yeah.
And he doesn't text Carrie and stuff. I'm sure he's still in touch with her. Like, to think that. Yeah. You know, he can still text her from Tokyo. They still have a friendship. It's just that he's not going to be in the city anymore. So,
yeah,
that's kind of episode 4. I'm going to say, like,
just the last bit where Carrie kind of goes on a mad one at your one scene because she dropped the frame. Now, I honestly can understand why. Like she said, like Big used to touch that every night, and now she needs to replace the glass.
It was really sad.
Mm. So it was obviously just like, you know, a picture that he had beside his bed, and I thought it was sad. But she kind of like, you know, bit your one's head off. She obviously didn't do it.
Well, I'd be really upset as well if someone. I mean, and it wasn't her being upset. It was obviously her grief coming out there.
Yeah.
It wasn't like,
and that's the first time we've really seen, like, you know, she, you know, in the third episode with Natasha, she had that kind of sense of vulnerability, and she's almost going through, like, you know, obviously grief is different for everyone, but you know, when she's not crying at the funeral, I think she's really kind of put up on a front of like, you know, I'm not dealing with it, I'm, you know, moving forward, I'm moving out of the apartment, etc. And I think this was the first real flicker of grief that we're seeing, and I think this is how it's gonna, you know, people are saying, oh, well, she was so devastated with the marriage, and it's like grief attack, different traumatic events, and grief affects people very differently. So she was probably really devastated at the wedding, and then it was really, really emotional, but this is completely different because her husband's died, and she's just put on a front, and she's just trying to get on with her life. So I think this was a real vulnerable episode where we had that flicker of anger and that kind of her starting to, you know, or
come out,
carrying on, you know, dealing with that grief and dealing with the loss of her husband.
Yeah, it was really, yeah.
So that was kind of the end of.
And Seema kind of got one back at her then.
But that was a bit stupid.
Instead of it, like
it's so different. Like, she said something that offended her a little bit, but like, she literally smashed a grieving widow's frame of her husband, and like, it was a bit of,
accidentally. Like, let's just say that she accidentally smashed. Yeah. I do you know what? I've watched this episode 4 times now, and the more I watch it, the more I can actually understand of, like, you know, because do you remember when, like, I was saying, like, Seema is so much like a Samantha, and I think Samantha really kind of just pulled Carrie up sometimes on her own lack of awareness. So it was actually nice to see that. I'm like, I think people are thinking Seema's comparing her dead husband to her dating, and it's like, it wasn't that. It was the fact of, it was a photo, yes, of her dead husband, but it was an accident. She apologized. She didn't try and hide it. She didn't try and replace the frame and say nothing. Like, she apologized. And I think it was almost nice to see kind of Carrie, like, her kind of Seema have a really organic conversation, a real conversation.
Yeah, kind of hold Carrie accountable.
Hold her accountable for things because
holding her accountable. Like, you know, she, you know, Carrie didn't mean that to come across about the, it's still great that you're putting yourself out there. But, you know, she, you know, I think on the other side of that and Seema's point of view, you know, I'd probably be pissed off if someone said that to me. Sorry, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, but of course it's a bit of a dig. It's a bit of a, like, I suppose if someone said that to me as well, I'm thinking like, oh, isn't it great you're still looking or at this age? I'd be a bit like, oh, fuck off.
Well, it's different for you in your 30s and someone I'm just in their 50s
there, but maybe I would take that and maybe Seema probably did, but I wouldn't say she got really offended. But when Carrie's saying something to her, maybe she's like, you know what, well, this is actually a bit something I didn't like either. So if we're going to have a friendship, let's talk about it and let's put it aside and have sushi, which I like.
Yeah.
Like when, you know, when Carrie walks in on Samantha blowing the
worldwide. Yeah, I was just thinking that.
And she has that like element, you know, when she's just like,
judgment, like,
I would never do this. And Samantha's like, yeah, there's the judgment or something along those lines. Yeah. And they like, you know, it doesn't like, I don't think Seema was trying to compare Carrie's dead husband with her dating. I think she was just trying to explain her own point of that it wasn't supposed to come across in being insensitive or, you know, doing anything on purpose or like over. I think she was just almost trying to show Carrie in a more sincere way. And I think Seema as a character seems to be very much more upfront, very kind of straight to the point. So yeah, this is probably exactly how she would deal with it.
Yeah.
So I actually, the more I watch it, the more I kind of understand the scene. I think when you watch it for the first time, you're like, you smashed or you accidentally smashed that photo that it touched every day, and you're now trying to talk, compare that to Tinder. But the more you watch it, I think once you watch it a few times, you actually understand she wasn't trying to compare it. She was just trying to use it as an example that it was an accident and she is really sorry.
That's a good point. No, yeah, I agree.
But also, we can't skip episode 4 without talking about the fashion to start with, Carrie wakes up in the apartment. She's got the blue coat over her that she wore in season 4, episode 2 on the runway. In the words of Stanford Blatch, she's fashion roadkill.
Yeah.
And she's like, so, like, she's just forgetting the sheets, forgetting the duvet.
It's so Carrie. Yeah. Isn't
and
it?
The shoes from the, you know, the episode we mentioned at the start, the I Heart New York, and she gets those pink shoes.
The Louboutins? Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if they were Louboutins or Jimmy shoes.
No, they're Louboutins because they had a red bottom on them, I remember. Because Miranda's water broke on them.
Ah, yes. You can see those in the closet, and you can also see the Vivian Westwood luggage, which she used when she went for the book tour, and she also used in the second movie when they went to Abu Dhabi.
You can see the white dress as well from the first film, you know, with the big flower on it too.
I just love these key, like, for me, that's really, you know, I love fashion, and that's just really what drew me to it, I think, to begin with, was that kind of Carrie's love of fashion. And like, she walks into the kitchen and like, there's shoe boxes all over the kitchen.
I know, so me.
She goes to get coffee in this big white tutu, and it's just like that.
I love that. That's for me what I love so much about Sex and the City, and it's just, it sure reminds me of me. Yeah. I live in my grandmother's house, and I've like a Jimmy Choo box in the box room. I'm like, what? Like, the fuck? I like my fashion where I can see it now, hanging in my closet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love Molly Rogers. I think she's done a really good job with the styling, I have to say.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really. Like, there was so much, I think, prior to this, with obviously all the paparazzi shots being released, and people were really overly critical of it, and it was always going to be a really difficult job stepping into the you know, the shoes of Patricia Field. But I think you know what the costume designers and Molly have done, I think they've done, like, they've really respected the legacy of the characters whilst doing it in a way which is, you know, they have evolved over time. They're, you know, they're different women, they're at a different point in their life, you know, but still have those elements, like, you know, Charlotte's very chic, you know, Carrie, she has this really kind of flamboyant, you know, really kind of like risk-taking fashion, you know, real kind of Carrie Bradshaw. Miranda, you know, I just think they're just, the fashion for me is just brilliant.
She stayed in tone with who they were, and also kept in with their age,
grew
as
with
well.
Them as well, like, yeah. Okay, so
just to move on then to episode 5, which is called Tragically Hip.
Oh my god.
I just think it's just, of course, again, like, with this whole age, her hip narrative, surgery. Like, she has to get this now, like hip surgery, as if she's like a 75-year-old woman who's like,
I know,
who needs a hip replacement. Like, come on.
And also, we've seen her walking around Central Park in heels. She doesn't complain about her hip then.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway,
she wonder she has hip problems. The woman's been in heels since she was 2.
Yeah, literally. They said it was a birth defect, didn't they, though?
Yeah. Actually, sorry. So they start off by coordinating Carrie's like post-operative care from her surgery.
So funny.
And then Charlotte finds out during a Zoom meeting the other moms that her daughter Rose has now been requested to be called Rock. And I think this storyline is just, it's one of the storylines, I just find it very authentic. I actually do find it authentic.
It's probably my favorite storyline at the moment in the series.
I think it's really important, obviously, to reference like a child who might be going through this, and it's also important, I think, they show how like the parents react,
how they
and
react,
I think
yeah.
like they show it really authentically. It's like they're not just like, oh my god, we yes it's fine, like
they're showing the real the struggles emotion. That the parents probably do have,
you know, like the parent would probably be a little bit confused, and you know, it is kind of like, you have to, I think, like, even to just to reference when Bruce Jenner transitioned to Caitlyn Jenner, they said like you do have to like mourn the loss person, because you are losing a person. So I think for a parent to have had a daughter and bring her up their whole life as Rose to now find that she wants to be called Rock, it's a little bit hard for them.
But it's awful the way they say it to Charlotte on the Zoom, and then Lisa's like, I'll call you in a sec, which I love. She's like, okay. She didn't want to have this conversation on Zoom
in front of everyone,
which I was like, was really thoughtful of her to be like, look, I thought you knew. Like, she was really, I thought she was a really good friend. Didn't want to like embarrass Charlotte or anything. She just wanted to have the one-on-one conversation. I think
I agree. Like, one of the favorite storylines, I think they have an opportunity here to tell a really beautiful story about, you know, a young child transitioning and discovering of who they really are, and actually showing a really authentic point of view of the parents, which I think so many people will relate to. Yeah. And I think so many people will relate to, you know, being confused about your identity and, you know, almost coming of age and discovering of who you are, but showing both sides, you know. And I think they can, you know, because Charlotte, what I love about this most is that Charlotte has always been so kind of like conservative, almost prudish, and she's just so, she seems so open and supportive.
Yeah, but more, I think, confused and hurt about the fact that Rose at the time didn't come to her about it.
Yeah,
you know, like told to school she wanted to be known as
that's
Rock.
Quite prevalent. That's so, because when I came, I mean, you know, I'm not comparing us to, but when I came out, I told all my friends to start with. I built a web of friends before coming out to my family. So again, that's actually a really awful, not that everyone comes out that way.
Yeah.
Everyone's journey is really different. So they didn't do that in the kind of coming to the parents were accepting. And then that's just how the storyline, they have an opportunity here to tell a really beautiful story, which I'm really loving.
I think that's Charlotte's main thing. She's like, you didn't tell us, but you told your teachers. I think that's what Charlotte was struggling with.
Yeah,
she was like, I thought like we were closer than that kind of thing.
Yeah. Again, I think it's just, it's showing the storyline of like, sometimes it is easier to tell other people than to tell your family. Like, you know, they're probably the hardest people to tell, because you just don't want them not to accept you.
And then obviously Lily is so, looks so perfect, you know, like she's a penis. She just looks like she has her shit together. And like, I suppose like she's maybe Rose, like at the time was like, my sister's so perfect and everything, you know, I don't want to like,
but then again, when they did confront, well, I'm gonna say Rock,
when they're playing a video game,
he was very like, very open to showing them about him coming out on TikTok.
He's like, oh, I did it on TikTok. And Charlotte's like, what where is it, like
going through all the videos.
And then even Lily singing the song, I thought it was really funny because Lily's obviously quite chilled.
Lily's
just like, oh, just,
and what I like about it is also they go about it in a way where it's like, to Lily and stuff, it's not a big deal.
Lily's just
you know. And I think that is a thing about our like generation now, like I don't think it's a big deal for people like us, like for people, you know, people coming out as trans or anything like that. Like we wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. Like we wouldn't
not anymore.
I feel like our generation group now is very accepting, and like these are just normal things now, which is kind of like they show that
it's more like the I suppose our parents' generation. I don't know about your anyone older in your life, but I just think it's a totally different time. Like they don't understand
things. Yeah, I mean, I you know, I was, you know, I didn't really feel like I ever had to come out of the closet. I mean, I, as a complex, it's a really old fashioned, you know, why are we straight until said otherwise? So, you know, my grandmother was one of the most open and supporting people. So I can never say it's, you know, it's a generational thing. I think it, you know, it is easy to see how certain times in society or within history influence certain people's mindsets, but I always had a really open and supporting family from an older generation, so you know, that's from my experience.
But some people
that's
are
really nice though either. Again, like this is again why it's so good to have someone else on the podcast to bring like, this your own opinions and your own like
different. But they're still telling this story authentically.
But we haven't got, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, we haven't seen the full thing play out yet, so it's but I do think it's like they go to the school to talk to the teacher. But it's bad because the school obviously is so good about it, like really modern school, obviously, and only Charlotte would pick them. That's an amazing school that's really like obviously have great support system and things like that, which is obviously really easy.
I do think schools are now being like, oh, they have
they're
be
way
like
more
now.
Like jobs too, like everywhere has to have now, like a lot of jobs have like a diversity
policy
and like that's also new in the last few years, and the same with schools. Like our mom works in a second school with teenage girls, with also all girls school, and like
there is trans people
and there's like
within that school and like they're all very open and like, you know, there for people.
But as a teacher now you'd have to be very able to have conversations
like. I think it's good, and I think, you know, we're obviously, this is based in New York, and in the last couple of years there's been so many, you know, going into more deeper, but it is kind of reflected into you know, having such a great school system. You know, in America alone in the last couple of years, you know, the trans healthcare rollback, trans people can't serving in the military, etc. So to see this great support system for children within you know, the school setting is really great to see.
Yeah, it is. Harry's the one that's kind of a bit like, you know, he doesn't really understand as much. I think
like, though, if you look at Harry's character, like maybe his background growing up, like, you know, I'm gonna say it's understandable for someone maybe who doesn't have any really,
to have questions
as a parent, like maybe not fully understand.
And he is
happening.
Probably conservative. He's a lawyer. He's very like matter of fact, and you see, he's very black and white. Like he's not gray area, you know.
I think all I'll say is that it's understandable to see him question things and not fully understand it. I don't think you can fault someone for, you know, something that they probably don't have a lot of knowledge about to understand something, like, you know. So I think it's nice to see how that storyline was.
I like how Charlotte says to him, you know, like, you were a great father. Like, you know, in case he's starting to doubt, have I done something wrong?
I think
here,
as well,
you know?
Though, the main thing is that they both show just such love for their child.
That's the loveliest thing to see, is that unconditional love and support. They're just trying to work out, you know, how to navigate this. But,
yeah,
you know, the love is
trying to navigate through.
Yeah.
But nothing, the one thing that doesn't change is their love for their child, which I think was like the biggest thing I took from that, was like nothing would ever
change.
Which
is great for parents who are watching like all over the world to see. They might be going through the same thing and to see how their
emotions
are accepting. It's just like, you know, it is.
And it's great. What I love the most about all of this is that, you know, some of the things that they've touched upon, as we've said, perhaps has been done in a forced way. But what I love is that the show was so groundbreaking, because it pushed conversations forward that weren't being having. And even in this conversation right now, we're sitting here having a really open conversation and pushing these conversations forward, which needs to be had. And I think that was why the show was so groundbreaking to start with. So it's nice to see that this again is pushing these conversations, even just between us three, but you know, much wider society. That's what I really love about the show, that it can be so relevant to all of us in so many different ways, and push the conversations in the society that do need to be had.
So we're just going to go quickly into just Miranda getting the book from Charlotte about, you know, trying to create drink. So I think this is like Charlotte's way, without trying to embarrass Miranda and, you know, accuse her of, you know, having a drinking problem. I think it was her way of kind of...
Well, we think she sent it.
Yeah, well, we don't actually know Charlotte did send
at this
it.
Time, we Miranda thinks Charlotte sent this book to her.
Oh, Charlotte definitely sent it. Charlotte 100%. You look through her Amazon order list, it's there.
Yeah. But I think it's important, like how do you approach, if like the thing about Carrie is, I know Carrie's going through her own shit, but it's like she doesn't notice the important things. Like she's very dismissive of Miranda going through something, like she hasn't opened
her
eyes.
Can we excuse that because she's going through a loss, or is she just being ignorant?
Yeah, I think she's really caught up. I think she's caught up in her own kind of her own grief and her own stage of life, that it's really, and I think that's probably quite real actually.
Yeah,
and especially Harry, not very self-aware even the best of times.
I mean, I feel like her character is very like that sometimes. It's
like, but if someone came to me about something like that and I was going through what she was going through, I literally be like, I don't have the head for this right now.
Yeah,
I have my own stuff, like.
Which I think Miranda is probably why Miranda, when Carrie's like, why didn't you come to me before, you know, Miranda's probably like, you know, because AI was confused and wasn't really sure, you know, what's happening, but also because you've also got your own stuff, you know, you're grieving the loss of your husband, like, yeah, you know, you sometimes feel like you don't want to burden people with your own problems, yeah, or your own things.
Yeah,
I think that's quite real. But also I didn't like when, you know, and this is I'm jumping back to episode 3 just really briefly, when they're in the back of the cab and Charlotte's talking to Carrie about the drinking problem and Carrie just kind of dismisses it and she's like, can you just not notice things? That really pissed me off, because I was like,
yeah, that's what I was saying by this, is like Carrie just seemed very dismissive of a comment. So yeah, that could be very harmful to one of her best friends, and I feel like her best friends have really stepped up for whatever she's needed them. So when Big deserted her at the altar, jilted her at the altar, no matter what she's gone through, especially Miranda has always been so supportive for her. So it was like for her to just kind of dismiss something that could be serious,
fatal,
was a bit like, you know, sad to see. And but I know she's gone through her shit.
Yeah, but I suppose it is kind of typical Carrie, isn't it?
That's what I mean.
She is a bit selfish when it comes to those things.
Yeah.
But
Carrie.
Like with the bullshit bagels, like,
yeah,
you know, she didn't even bring cream cheese.
Yeah, or like, yeah. So like, yeah, we can know that Carrie's gone through something horrible and unimaginable. But yeah, she was very quick to dismiss.
But I do know what I like
could be a serious problem.
What I like about the alcohol storyline, though, I think it's so
relatable
because it's not like Miranda is in a coma surrounded with bottles of vodka. You know, it's like she's a functioning drinker where you know she's able to like thus far hide it because it's obviously not affecting her college work. It's not affecting her life, anything really at the moment.
She's just having an extra drink at lunch or an extra drink at night, or you know just drinking here and there.
Like, you're not Irish, but like it is a huge thing in Ireland that people sometimes they would have a glass of wine every night with their dinner, or like, and it is this way of like, you know, that is in some ways
if
like
you can't
a
go a
if
day
you can't go a day without having a drink
like you need to like kind of look and reflect and say, is this a problem?
And that's why I think her story is actually very real, because it's not like your typical alcoholic what people think is like going around like passing out. Like it's just like she's able to function.
It's not the stereotype. It's done in it. Like a completely realistic sense, but not in the kind of cliche, like the way that they kind of like adapt this to like television. It's done in a you know, as you know,
her, she's not falling around drunk all the time.
It's not bothering her. She's still going about her everyday life, you know, but it is, you know, part of the, you know, is part of her life that she needs to address and she needs to deal with.
I think it's very relatable.
Yeah, so we just go then to Carrie, then we'll go say she has her surgery. So
she wears Birkenstocks.
Yeah. So she's had her surgery and we have Miranda. And
also, sorry, I do not believe that Carrie would ever buy a pair of Toms.
I can, when she was like, because I wanted to make my, you know, I wanted to feel like a good person.
Because they, like, yeah, but I was still like, oh my God.
I don't think she bought them to wear.
Oh, maybe not. She just bought them to, like, do good, which is a typical Carrie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a typical Carrie thing.
So, yeah, she has her surgery and we have Miranda and Charlotte there for her, of course, as always. And Che comes up and Miranda gets excited. So we obviously know where this kind of storyline is going because
she gets, like, giddy. And Carrie's like, no. Please don't send anyone else up. And Miranda's like, okay. But that, you know what's funny is Miranda just keeps referring to herself now as Rambo. Because she's like, oh, this is like a new thing, you know? It's like, like Che gave her a nickname. So she's like,
she goes by,
oh my God, this is like so exciting. It's like, you know, it's their little joke.
Yeah.
But Miranda's like running with it.
So Miranda then takes Che out for dinner.
But they're eating in the hospital, I think.
Oh, are they in the hospital? Well, they go for food anyway.
Che brings Carrie food. And Miranda goes
and
to
then
town.
Miranda just eats down, I think, in the hospital.
Yeah,
canteen.
In the hospital downstairs, like, obviously.
And they're having a conversation.
Miranda's so enamored by Che.
Yeah.
Like, it's, but again, like
Che
is very charming.
I did say that before in the recent podcast. I was like, I fancy Che.
Like, she's like, or they're so attractive. No, I'm just like, in general, the whole charisma part of it.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
I can totally see
that. Really infectious. They've got an infectious energy, like you want to be friends with.
They're
Che,
really,
like,
yes, they're cool. They're, I don't know, they're just,
they
really,
just have a
they're
cool swag
and they're strong. I don't know.
But even in the next preview for the next episode, when, you know, they say, what's your fantasy? And Miranda says about Carrie's boss, and Charlotte's like, I can see that. Did you see that, Ed?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, the trailer, yeah, for the next episode.
So I can totally see why.
Okay, but I know, I just want to cut to the chase and get to the scene.
Well, okay, let's hold it. we get Carrie, you know, in hospital. She's kind of done her treatment. She's on the way home. I love that she's like doped up. I love that she's in the back of a bread truck eating a roll. You know, I love that she gets carried, but it's so funny and fun, like getting lifted up the stairs and she's wearing like feathery slippers and she's just like a little princess. I love it. Like, so cute. And then, you know, they're all taking their turns to like look after her. And
well, she does the podcast.
Oh, she does the podcast. Like... Sorry, with the big bonnet on her head.
I do you know what I love the most about this is that like Carrie always had the most glamorous situations. She's just completely taken out of her comfort zone and she's put in such a kind of unglamorous setting of like, you know, she can't tell if she's peeing on the toilet. She is, you know, high doing the podcast, etc. Like something that you really wouldn't see Carrie in a position was. She's completely been taken out of her comfort zone and that's what I really love about it. That she's just out of her comfort zone.
And she talks about the diaphragm story, Samantha taking it out and everything. But
she mentions Samantha Jones by name. So I think Charlotte just...
Oh, she actually said she says my good friend Samantha Jones.
This is another thing that I just... The whole Samantha narrative, it just really pisses me off.
Yeah, we hate it. I hate it so much.
I hate the fact that they were almost having like a text. They were texting each other when she just wanted to let her know that this happened. And Samantha was like, one of my finest moments.
I read it in her voice.
Yeah. And she was like, it was like they were friends again. And then like, she was like, I miss you.
But Samantha will never say I miss you too. She's not emotional like that. Remember Miranda's mom died. She couldn't even say, I'm sorry.
She did at the end.
At the end, but up until
then, if you look at the conversation when Carrie thanked Samantha for sending her over flowers, she just ignored it.
She wrote, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bullshit.
It's just bullshit.
We just hate it.
I can't get over the storyline. Samantha is I'm just I miss her so much. I miss her.
Yeah, we really just miss her.
I'm not accepting it. Can I say
your unpopular opinion? Like, I miss it to a point, but also I like for the first couple of episodes, I was like, oh yeah, Samantha's not in it, is she? Like it was almost like she did, like I think they've done the best of a bad situation, same with Stanford. Like, you know, we're never gonna love like not seeing these characters which we grew up on and fallen in love with and we're so invested in to ever leave. Like that it's never gonna be done in a way where anyone is happy with it. But I like that they've kind of like, you know, Samantha, you know, I think, you know, slightly dramatic that she's moved to London and she's not talking to anyone. But do you remember when kind of the scene we were talking about before when Samantha's trying to help Carrie find her book cover outfit and, you know, Carrie says something and then Samantha just, you know, I will do whatever or whomever.
I will blow whoever and I will.
I can breathe and kneel. Yeah. Samantha's ego can get very damaged. So it actually kind of makes sense that, you know, Carrie doesn't need a publicist anymore. So she's gone to London. A bit unrealistic, but, you know, in the circumstance of her character, I do think it's actually slightly real.
You don't know what's going to happen, though. I'm like, I have a feeling in my gut that something, they'll have a reconciliation. On a text message or something, and she'll say, "I'm coming to New York at the very end," or something I'm just gonna come back.
I feel like Kim Cattrall's gonna come back. I feel like because they've already spoken about doing another series. I feel like, you know, when they were doing the text message, I was just waiting for Kim Cattrall to pop out of Carrie's closet.
I think there'll be a reconciliation. Well, I think there'll be some sort of it. They will not make them not be friends.
I am for Samantha, so I love her.
And I love her too.
And then this is the scene I've just been traumatized by, so I just really want to get to it and talk about it. I watched it, and as the scene was happening, I actually turned off the telly and walked out the room because I was literally just like, I can't.
Well, it was just, well, look, it's Sex and the City, isn't it?
I know, but like, it was Sex and the City, but it was also like really disturbing because Carrie literally had to piss.
It was her watching it that made me awkward.
Yeah,
it was like
she fell.
That's what I mean. It wasn't the actual act itself.
It wasn't the scene.
Carrie could see it in the mirror, and Carrie couldn't hear her.
Carrie couldn't get out of the bed to go to the toilet. She was crippled.
Yeah, that's what was making me uncomfortable.
I just wanted to die.
And she's like, Miranda.
One thing I just want to put out there. I think, like, obviously Miranda's storyline is really important, and I know Cindy Nixon herself had a lot to do with, I think, the storyline, as it's like very like goes with her life, and it thinks that maybe this has happened to her in another life, because I know she was with a man and then is with a woman now. But I just am a big fan of Miranda and Steve.
It's just, yeah, you're coming from the I love Miranda and Steve. Like, how do you feel about Miranda and Shay's situation in the kitchen?
I love it. I think it's about time Miranda got, like, you know, she let her fabulous new grey hair down. And, you know, I think this was such a kind of reflection. You remember when, like, Miranda hurts her neck and, like, Carrie sends Aiden to look after her. And now it's kind of like, you know, and Miranda's like, you should have been there for me. And it's almost like she's kind of got her own, not done it on purpose, obviously. But you know what? She didn't fall out of bed. She just pissed the bed. It could have been worse. Like,
she pissed in a bottle and spilled it on the bed.
Yeah, which she didn't eat. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
But Carrie's so, I have to say, like, Carrie's very aggressive here.
Well,
like,
she's
a bit like,
oh my God, if your friend was coming over to look after you after a big operation that you needed help to the toilet, and then you look in and see her cheating on her husband with her boss,
I know,
and you're like trying to pee in a bottle, I'm pretty sure you'd be fucking angry at that.
I love the way Miranda's so like, she's just going to the toilet and Carrie's like, I saw you having sex in my kitchen. And Miranda's like, oh, sorry about that.
Like, she gets really awkward. Oh, it's just a weird
thing. And Carrie's like, what are you doing? And she was like, oh, we were drinking tequila. And Carrie was like, why are you drinking tequila in the middle of the day and smoking pot in my apartment with my boss when you have a husband?
Yeah, in fairness, like, and Miranda's like, fair enough.
Yeah, it's like, Carrie just calls it as it is. She's like,
well, it's fair enough. Like, it is what happened.
She did cheat on her husband in Carrie's kitchen. And that's mean.
Yeah, it is mean. Look, I know, again, the storyline, I can see it happen and I can see Miranda and Che together, and I do, like, a part of me is like, I do like it, but then another part of me is just like, again, as I've watched the series for so long, I'm attached to, like, the characters, I'm attached to, like, their relationship, so, like, I would have loved, like, I always say, I think I said this on the podcast before, so Steve and Miranda's, you know, when they have their split up and they're so, like, both of them are just so heartbroken.
Yeah, and they meet up on the Brooklyn Bridge.
On the Brooklyn Bridge. And, you know, like, it makes me cry.
Yeah.
The music in the background, and they run to each other and they give each other this big hug, and they just...
I'm coming from a place of, I love Miranda and Steve together. I'm not coming from a place I don't like Miranda and Chai together.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what I'm saying.
I'm such an advocate for their relationship. I don't want them to end.
Yeah. That's kind of where we're coming from.
I think it's like... I'm coming from this in a point of view of, like, I'm enjoying their lives being completely disrupted. I absolutely am loving it, because I also love Steve, but also, like, you know, in the first episode where Carrie's like, you know, we can't stay who we were forever. And I love seeing that these characters evolve, and I love that they're telling different stories and they're going, like, you know, through different points of their life, and they're having all this disruption, and they're, you know, the combining element, you know, the kind of collective element is their friendship that's getting them all through it.
So, you know what, I'm the opposite to you, Jordan. I'm like, I do love Steve.
I promise you, I love Steve in the hearing aid. I love him. But I am enjoying, like, you know, and it'll be heartbreaking to watch that scene where, you know, Miranda presumably is breaking up with Steve. But you know what, people, you know, this is, you know, as Carrie said in the first episode, we can't stay who we were forever. You know, people grow up and they grow happen. Up.
I think they're going to make it amicable.
Maybe Steve will get back with Debbie.
Steve is probably going to be like, Miranda, I've known for years since I found the Playboys under your bed. I feel like that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's
do you think?
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, like something along the lines of, I think Steve, you know, they haven't, you know, as Miranda said, like, you know, they haven't had sex in years. You know, they've just, you know, they, you know, are
they
we
living together as like their best friend, their best friends, like,
but yeah, there. I feel like Steve, I think in this context, it's not, you know, I'm not saying cheating is cheat, I'm not condoning any cheating, but I think it's different because Miranda is having this point in her life where she's discovering new things about herself, and I think Steve being Steve will completely support that. I hope so. I think that would be the best way to do it.
I think they will. I think they will make it very supportive, because again, I feel like it's an important storyline, and I feel like they will try and make it a situation where everyone is quite accepting of it. So I do.
I just see the way you're saying you like the disruption of all their lives.
I do. I love it.
I'm a happy ending person, right? I love like the thoughts of him, like the second film and the second film, that's it, sealed off, that's the series in the two episodes, let's keep them in a little box forever, let's not open it back up, it's fine as it is. I like the ending. I hate this, like, taking the box, picking it apart again. I like happy endings and fairy tale endings.
I'm like, rip it apart.
I'm so the opposite. I'm like, that's why I like Disney stuff, like, I'm old school, like, I'm such a romantic. I love, like, that's why I re-watch films all the time, because I like to know. It's in a psychological way. When I rewatch films,
you know
what's
gonna happen.
Yeah. I like to know what's going to happen. And this whole, like, I don't know what's going to happen here is throwing me, like, when I go to watch it, it's so funny, every episode I go to watch, I have a pit in my stomach. So I'm like, what's going to happen today?
I think I've just accepted that things are going to change and like yeah. they are disrupting their whole lives. And I think I've just, what we've done and said before, that we've just separated Sex and the City from this.
Yeah.
So like, I keep my Sex and the City, exactly. I keep that, my right Samantha here. Definitely. And then I'm just like letting whatever happens, happens. But can we also just to quickly know, I'm just reading the recap here, and it says that Miranda discovers that she actually drunk ordered the Amazon book herself.
Yeah, I said
herself.
That. So she ordered the Amazon book herself about drinking.
Oh, I completely.
So she got the email when she was making a Negroni, listening to Che on a podcast. I think she was making a drink in their house, and then she got an email from Amazon to say, "I hope you enjoyed your purchase." And then Miranda's like, "Fuck!" And she goes, "What else did I drunk order?" So Miranda got that for herself.
And then poured out all her drink. So
that's why it wasn't Charlotte at all.
But it's nice to see Miranda. But Miranda
clearly, her psychological, like her deep down, she knows she has a problem. Which, remember, she said to Carrie, if I had a problem, I'd know about it. I'd do something about it. She obviously did something about it while she was drunk.
Yeah.
And then now she's like, okay, I must.
I don't know how I missed. I completely missed that part.
It's easy to kind of miss. It is.
There's me grassing up Charlotte and her Amazon orders when all along it was Miranda that was doing it.
Yeah, it's very easy to miss. It's just that the email pops up on the iPad saying, I hope you enjoyed your order.
Oh, so it actually... I remember seeing that when she's pouring out the vodka.
No, she does.
It didn't quite twig to me.
So it was never really Charlotte. It was actually her.
And she pours out her drink, which is good to see that she's maybe taking this stuff.
Taking it seriously. So, it's good that she's kind of acknowledging it and
doing something about it.
Yeah.
And then my favorite scene then of all is when Carrie is back to wearing her heels.
I know, with her.
Oh, I love that scene. This is what I live for. Scenes like that is what I live for.
Same. And I'm glad they didn't show us her wearing flats for too long, because I don't think I could have did the hell with that. Like, I love
it. It's not working stocks in the city. It's,
it was a nice little ending when you see her. I always love that shot of her in the wardrobe. I'll never get tired of that when she's wearing
all the shoes lined up and just turns around and she just that is exactly what I love about. That's what makes it feel like Sex in the City.
Yeah.
But I love the storylines because they are so not the original series, obviously, because it's a completely different new chapter. But I love that they still have the elements of what drew us and made us fall in love with these characters.
I really feel like actually Jordan's made me like it a bit more now.
Yeah, I feel like talking.
You're actually making your I'm kind of like
Sarah Jessica Parker should cut me a check then.
You're selling it.
I'm conveying everyone.
Yeah, I do feel like I'm getting more accepting as the episodes go on. You know, like I feel like I'm settling into it more. It was just weird. I think, you know, when you watch it, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
From loving the show for so long, but I'm definitely more. More accepting and open to it. But I think, oh my god, I think we spoke for like 75 hours.
Yeah. It was great to have you on, Jordan. I feel like
we could have been talking for like 5 minutes. Like when you talk about something that you love, it feels like time literally goes in a flash. Like I feel like we only spoke about our first Sex and the City experiences like 10 minutes ago.
The only reason I'm looking at it is because I looked at the clock and I was like, what the fuck, it's 20 to 4? The fuck.
But just thanks so much for coming
on. I love having these conversations with people that love Sex and the City as much as we do.
It's great to have a different perspective and different like opinions, which is something that we love, because you know, it's like me and Kira always have the same opinions. We're like, we hate him, we love her, we do this.
No, you're in a different, you're kind
of sometimes, but it's nice to have someone come in with like lots of different views, and it's great to have your views on, and hopefully people can relate to them.
Yeah, and we'll definitely have you back
airtime to talk about Carrie Bradshaw. I'm always welcome to that.
Yes.
And we're definitely gonna have you on for some episodes when we do our actual, we'll move back to the regularly I can't speak scheduled regular programming of the actual series. But when you're, for your favorite ones, definitely I Heart New York and the other one as well, because I love dissecting those kind of episodes, because they're more fun. I think they're easier to talk about.
And we know so much more, I think, because we know like the kind of like, you know, a season later, that kind of story comes up to wraps, big moves back to New York, etc. Like we have a kind of like more of a substantial ending, so it's easier to dictate. Whereas this is such a new
the unknown, isn't it?
Territory. Yeah. Whereas like we don't want to, we're kind of wanting to assume things, or we're kind of like pre kind of like meditating this idea of what's going to happen in a future episode, but none of us know. That's why it's so difficult to kind of, you know, dictate sometimes. But with the originals, because we've watched them 150 times, there's so much more to pull apart.
But thank you so much.
Thanks so much for coming on, and I'm sure we'll be
be in touch on Instagram.
Yes.
Okay.
And we'll talk soon. And thanks everyone for listening.
Like
for listening. And just like that, it is over.
Thank you.
See you later.
See you later.